Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
A look back at the biggest economic stories of 2022 and what we're watching for the new year. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams in for Kai Rizdal. It's Friday, December 30th. Good to have you along. For our last show of the year, we'll start by looking back at the economic year that was with some of our regulars who usually help us wrap up the economic week that was. Joining me now are Catherine Rampell at The Washington Post and Lynette Lopez, a business insider on the road like many of us this holiday weekend. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kimberly.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. So last year, the big story was supply chain dramas that we had all throughout 2021. What would you say is the big economic story of 2022? Lynette, you go first.
It's still going to be inflation, and it's going to be about whether the Fed is able to slow the rising of interest rates and beat inflation back down to 2%. You know, it seems like rates are high now and that rates were going up really fast, but the Fed has said that it has no intention of slowing down. So whatever that does, especially to financial markets, that's going to be the story of the next year.
Catherine, you too?
So I think the headline for this past year has been inflation, yes, and somewhat of the unwinding of supply chain issues, but persistently high price growth. For next year, I think the big question mark is the headline soft landing or is it recession? because the goal, of course, is that we can get out of this period of elevated inflation without crashing the economy. That would be the so-called soft landing. That's what the Fed is going for, but has historically had very much difficulty actually achieving. Or will we have a recession? Will we have, a lot of dislocation of workers, layoffs, that sort of thing? So I don't know which outcome we will arrive at next year. My hope, obviously, is for the soft landing.
Right. I mean, nobody can really know how this is going to play out. But Lynette, how does the Fed thread that needle? You have some sectors of the economy that are showing a little bit of recovery. I'm thinking about sort of the job market, the tightening of the labor force kind of easing up a bit, but also the housing market kind of showing signs that these interest rates are actually doing something. What will Jerome Powell do?
It's going to be raising rates until inflation goes down. You got to keep your eye on that CPI number. And I don't think he is very concerned about, say, stocks. I don't think the housing market is, I mean, he's concerned about it, but prices were elevated anyway. So I think a softening in the housing market doesn't necessarily worry him as much as it's getting inflation down. Nothing matters like this. And this means that people who invested a lot of their money in the stock market during the boom time in 2020 are really going to need to get out of the way. I think that the way the market closed this week was a really, and you know, as its worst year since 2008, I think that is a harbinger of even more doom.
For who do you think is going to feel it the most? Your sort of common retail investors? Are we thinking the big sort of hedge funds and things like that?
Everybody. It's a bear market. It's at the end of a bubble cycle that's about 10 years in the making. So if you're young and you're somebody like me who's trying to invest for the future, the next year or two will be watching to see when prices bottom and picking up some cheaper stocks. But it's not so great if you're, looking to retire in the next 2 years. So it just depends on what position you are in the stock market and what your holdings are. But I think that is a very dangerous place to be over the next year or two.
Catherine, we had some pretty big pieces of legislation actually make it into law this year, particularly the infrastructure law, which people still call the infrastructure bill because nobody can quite believe it's a law, and the Inflation Reduction Act. How do you imagine those are going to ripple through the economy in the coming year?
Well, the Inflation Reduction Act, remember, is the single biggest investment in climate mitigation in history. There's a ton of funding that's been made available for all sorts of upgrades, both for, tax credits for electric vehicles, utility grade solar and wind energy, retrofitting buildings and things like that. So there's a lot of money there that can be invested to transit as part of this transition to cleaner energy. How successful it is, I think, will really depend on whether Congress can also get through some form of permitting reform. Just because there's money there to do these projects doesn't mean that the projects can be completed, given how much red tape there is around a lot of, basically any kinds of new infrastructure building. The Congress has so far been somewhat reluctant to get that done, even though there are some lawmakers who are clearly very invested in it. But we'll see if it happens next year.
Yes. And Lynette, with that lovely soundtrack of New York behind you, I have to note that we are still in the pandemic. And I wonder how much you think it's still impacting the economy and how much the pandemic is going to be influencing how we live our day-to-day lives and our economic lives in the new year.
Well, I think the big, question about the pandemic and the economy is now coming from China. There were a lot of really optimistic predictions that once China lifted zero COVID, then the Chinese economy would get back to normal and all these things. But obviously that was nonsense. Once the Chinese lifted zero COVID, they had COVID. And now we have to deal with the second largest economy in the world, dealing with not rolling shutdowns or anything like that, but rising cases and people genuinely wanting to stay in their homes and not going to work, dealing with hospitals overflowing yet again, infrastructure overflowing, and the fear of a new variant coming from that. So, it isn't necessarily that U.S. consumers are directly affected by what's going on in China, but indirectly, I believe there will be significant effects.
Well, that's all the time we have. Catherine Rampell at The Washington Post and Lynette Lopez at Business Insider. Thank you two so much and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, Kim.
Wall Street ended the day and the year on a down note. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Southwest Airlines is having a better day today. According to FlightAware.com, the Dallas-based carrier has just canceled a few dozen flights today, which is a big improvement over the 16,000 or so flights that Southwest canceled over the past week, as winter storms exposed the company's reliance on outdated scheduling technology. Across social media, stranded passengers are vowing never to fly Southwest again. So just how seriously should the airline take those threats? Marketplace's Matt Levin has that one.
Catherine McAvoy was supposed to fly Southwest from Denver to Minneapolis on Wednesday.
We woke up Tuesday morning, my husband and I, to a notification that the flight had been canceled. So Tuesday afternoon, we packed up, got in the car, and then drove.
After spending the night in Nebraska, they made it to Minnesota. Luckily, the roads were fine. McAvoy says although it was definitely inconvenient, she'd still fly Southwest again. She's a fan.
So it's usually a good airline to use for the number of options as well as price. So we've been a customer for at least 5-6 years consistently.
They can't let this ever happen again. But in terms of their reputation with consumers, Southwest is going to recover from this week.
Gary Leff runs View from the Wing, a popular travel blog. He says, yeah, it's a bad look for Southwest that it's really the only airline to have such massive problems this holiday season. But consumers have short memories. JetBlue had a similar meltdown back in 2007 when an ice storm wrecked the airline's operations for a week.
Their reputation recovered as well.
Leff says to expect some discounted airfares in the next few months as Southwest tries to repair its relationship with its core customer, the budget-conscious leisure traveler. But cheaper flights and those mea culpa drink coupons may not satisfy business travelers. That's a market Southwest has aggressively pursued in recent years with features like better Wi-Fi and bigger luggage bins. Scott Forbes researches the airline industry at Jefferies.
I mean, the reputational impact could push business travelers away that really care about just being on time.
Although on the plus side, fewer business travelers can mean getting into boarding group A may finally be easier than getting a Taylor Swift ticket through Ticketmaster. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
This weekend's New Year's celebrations bring the holiday season to a close. And this time of year, a lot of people step away from the job for a while and switch from time with coworkers to time with families. But for some, your coworkers are your family. That brings us to today's installment of our series, My Economy.
I'm Erin Henning Nichols.
And I'm Benji Nichols.
And we run Inspired Magazine in Decorah, Iowa.
Erin is the creative force and I'm the nuts and bolts.
My parents had moved to Decorah and I landed with them and was waitressing and then getting a job at the local newspaper. This was 2006. And my first story was a local boy does good piece. He was living in California. So I interviewed him on the phone. He came back to visit his parents and we met for a drink at the place where I was waitressing. It was so cheesy. Love at first sight.
We hit it off.
On our first date, though, I told him about this idea of starting a positive news magazine. He said, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, which is a bit unlike him. So a week later, he asked me to marry him, and I said yes. And a year after that, we got married. And then a month after that, we started Inspired Magazine.
Yeah, fall of 2007.
October 4th.
we were willing to just take a risk because we were young and didn't have a ton to lose. It's a unique business model because we didn't have a huge investment in like brick and mortar. And at the same time, we hit a moment in time here in our region where people also embraced the idea. We live in rural America. We are in the upper rural Midwest. And there are a lot of people who live within our area that have really sketchy internet still to this day and may not use it as their main source of information all the time. And so to have a printed piece was something that people really embraced quickly and still embrace now. Everyone knows that during the pandemic, there was a huge rush on toilet paper, right? And so in terms of a paper supply chain, that's sort of where the crunch first happened, was in toilet paper and people hoarding, which I'm not sure we've fully unpacked as a society yet. But if you follow that train down...
Well, they couldn't get our paper. Then they had a paper that was similar, which was thicker, and that caused all sorts of logistical problems. And then they couldn't even get that offset paper, so then we went to glossy.
And even just in the last year, we've seen paper prices rise about 40%. And so when your material costs go up 40%, there's no way that you can immediately direct that onto your customers.
Yeah, I mean, we raised our ad rates 15% this past spring. It was the first time we'd raised our rates in 6 years. I mean, it was necessary before that, but we just had been putting it off. But everybody seemed to understand, which I'm really grateful for. I don't think we lost many advertisers. I always say time is so slippery because I was 26 when we started, and I'm like, how is that possible? It feels 15 seems like a lot.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's hard to believe we made it to 15 years, and yet it totally makes sense.
Aaron Henning Nichols and Benji Nichols, they've been married and running Inspired Magazine in Decorah, Iowa since 2007. You can tell us your story of life in this economy at marketplace.org/myeconomy. Coming up,
the material is still completely edible. Wouldn't taste nice, but you could eat it.
Edible fashion could be the future. But first, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average shed 73 points, 0.2%, to land at 33,147. The NASDAQ was off 11 points, 0.1%, to close at 10,466. The S&P 500 dipped 9 points, 0.25%, to end at 3839. For the week, the Dow and the S&P 500 lost 0.1%. The NASDAQ subtracted 0.3%. And in the worst year for U.S. stocks since 2008, the Dow retreated 8.8%. The NASDAQ plummeted 33.1%. And the S&P 500 was down 19.4%. Matt was telling us about how Southwest Airlines resumed normal operations today after a week where it canceled thousands of flights. Southwest flew up 0.8%. On this final trading day in 2022, energy stocks topped off a strong year. The sector gained more than 50% as disrupted oil supplies pushed up prices. Valero pumped up 0.4%. ExxonMobil, which is currently suing the European Union to stop a proposed windfall tax on oil companies, added 1%. Chevron grew 0.6%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.87%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. It's been a year of extreme highs and lows in global energy markets. The current price of natural gas in Europe has fallen to lows not seen since before the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February. Prices reached record highs after the start of the war as Russia cut gas exports to Europe following EU-imposed sanctions. Those high prices sparked a comeback for coal, which has served as a backfill energy source during these lean times. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has more.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine helped reverse a decade of steady declines for the coal industry, says Cole Smead, CEO and portfolio manager at Smead Capital Management.
Governments and economies have had to move back towards coal to meet the power and electricity needs that could not be met by natural gas.
That involved restarting coal-fired electricity plants that had been shut down and extending the lives of those whose days were numbered. But these boom times for coal might not last as prices for natural gas in Europe plummet, says Ellen R. Wald, president of Transversal Consulting and a fellow at the Atlantic Council's Global Energy Center.
One of the things that's been very helpful is that in Northwest Europe, we've seen some unseasonably warm weather through the winter, and that's reduced the demand for heating.
It's also been windy, which means plenty of renewable power is online. But even if the months ahead get colder, the recent stretch of milder weather has positioned Europe well.
That allows the European continent to refill their natural gas inventories, which have been drawn down during previous cold snaps. So if that continues, then Europe will be in great shape.
And that could end coal's record run, says Patrick McGinley, professor at West Virginia University's College of Law. While he expects coal to remain in the energy mix,
it's never going to recover to its former prominence.
That's because before the natural gas crisis, so many places had already started diversifying away from coal. And McGinley says there's good reason to keep it that way.
Primarily, it's international concern about climate change.
And the environmental toll, which he says mining and burning coal can have. So while coal has had a comeback this year, McGinley doesn't think it will last. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Speaking of the environment, fashion is one of the world's most polluting industries. More than half of all clothes are made from plastic, and the industry generates more carbon emissions than the world's international flights and maritime shipping combined. On the hunt for more sustainable materials, some designers are now turning to ingredients you'd normally find on your plate. The BBC's Katie Barnfield has been to Nottinghamshire in England to find out more.
We're in Sherwood Forest, a very famous English forest. It is a beautiful day and we've come here to look for mushrooms.
So we've got some horseshoe fungus here.
which is one of the main species that we work with on the material side of things. So it's quite easy to spot them out. They're very brown. They look like a horse hoof.
Ashley Granter runs Mico, a startup which makes a leather alternative from mycelium, the roots of mushrooms. It's one of a wave of companies turning to food as an ingredient to make more sustainable clothing.
We would typically work with what you would consider the root system of mushrooms, the network that's growing and digesting things behind the wood. With the horseshoe fungus, it's very much like a suede, like a very felt material.
Inside Ashley's house, it's like a laboratory. One room is stacked with trays of living fungus being coaxed to grow into sheets.
Over here, we have our finished fabric, which has gone through its treatment process. The material is still completely edible. Wouldn't taste nice, but you could eat it.
Oh, so soft.
Yeah, it's like suede, but it's indescribable in a way. Like, I don't think I've ever felt something like that.
The global market for plant-based leather is growing. It's now valued at more than $600 million, according to Polaris Market Research. But plastic-based synthetics are harder to replicate. Dr. Kate Riley is the synthetics lead at Textile Exchange, a non-profit trying to help brands around the world move towards more sustainable materials.
Where we are right now is that biosynthetic materials make up a really, really small percentage. It's around 0.03% of all polyester fibres. Bio-based nylon materials have a market share of about 0.4%.
Plant-based materials can cost around $50 a metre, compared to as little as a dollar a metre for fabrics like nylon. And it's also hard to mass produce them.
There's a lot of challenges around scale and availability. Processing can be a challenge, as well as price. So these materials, because they are, I would say, still quite niche and quite small in the market, they generally come at a higher price point. So for a lot of brands, they can be out of reach of the price points that they're looking for.
Food-based textiles are now being used by some of the big fashion brands like H&M and Nike. But in some cases, the clothes aren't fully made from plant-based materials.
Some of them are made with polyurethane or other petroleum-based chemicals in the finishing process.
Rachel Cernansky is the sustainability editor for Vogue Business. She's worried some companies could be deceiving consumers about how green their product actually is.
If it's all a brand is talking about, then it's not very promising and could be considered greenwashing. But if it's one step in a really sort of brand-wide transformation, I think there's real potential.
So there's still a way to go before we see food in the changing room as often as in a restaurant. But the mounting pressure from consumers on fashion brands to be more sustainable isn't going to stop anytime soon. I'm the BBC's Katie Barnfield for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, given the year we've had, it's appropriate to wrap things up with another inflation story. Yahoo Finance looked at how rising prices are affecting New Year's celebrations. The cost of alcohol is up 4.5% overall, wine specifically is up 3%, but they also looked at some culturally specific foods to ring in the new year. Fresh fruit plays a key role in some Filipino and Spanish traditions. Fruit prices are up 6.6% this year. For the Italian tradition of lentils at midnight, or, I'll add, black-eyed peas for many African-American families, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reports the cost of dried beans, peas, and lentils are up 7.8% from last year. Here's your moment of economic context. If you choose not to imbibe this New Year's, you're not alone. The market for non-alcoholic beverages as replacements for booze is growing. IWSR Drinks Market Analysis tracks the global beverage alcohol market, and they report that when it comes to low and no alcohol beers, ciders, wines, and other ready-to-drink products like mocktails, the size of that market passed $11 billion this year, compared to $8 billion in 2018. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. And I'm Kimberly Adams. We'll see you in the new year. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.